All right, let's start on the top of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph, 8 lines down. The Gemara begins with Gufa. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. This was a case that we just brought. Mana li biyadecha. I have 100 zuz with you. V'hala Omer. Another one says, Ein lecha biyadi klum. You have nothing with me. So now, it can't really be talking about a case of Kofer Bakol, because otherwise there is no Chiyuv Shvu'ah. So we're talking about where he says that, yes, you might have given them to me, but they're no longer with me. Whatever the reasons are that he states that they're no longer with him, or he's not obligated over here. But the fact is that he once was in possession of this money. Vinishba. And he takes a shvua to that effect. Ubao edim. And then edim show up. Patur. He doesn't have to pay anymore. Shenemar. Because it says in the pasuk, vilakach balav vilo yishalem. Kevin shekiblu balim shvua. Once the balim accept the shvua, Shuvei Mishalmi Mamon. He's no longer obligated to pay money. Or in essence, what happens is that the Baalim, in lieu of payment, accept the Shvu'ah, except in quotation marks, because it's not really up to them. It's the Beit Din that imposes the Shvu'ah on the individual taking it. But once he makes the Shvu'ah, there's no longer a claim against him, because the claim has been discharged by that Shvu'ah. If it turns out that the Shvu'ah is a Shvu'ah Sheker, that doesn't change the fact that the Shvua replaced the money or the monetary payment, but then he'll be subject to all the rules of Shvua Sheker, where a denial of money through a Shvua Sheker obligates him to pay, number one, if a deem come, and number two is that Shvua Sheker, all the punishments that come with Shvua Sheker will apply to him. So it's not that he's scot-free or he's off the hook, but as far as the Balim are concerned, they have no right of claim against him already, because the Shvua took it out of this case and basically opened up a new case against him, which is a case about Shvua Sheker. So Amar Rava, Mistavra Milte Drav. Rav's statement makes sense, Bimilve, if you're talking about a loan. Dilahotza Nitna. Because loans in general, this is a principle that we see all over Shas and Kedushin and other places, that Milve Lahotza Nitna means once the money is lent, the assumption is that the money is out of hand. That doesn't mean physically or literally it's out of hand, but it's assumed to have been spent or utilized. That's because the obligation to repay the loan is not the money that you were given. It's not the exact money that you were given. It's the equivalent value of what you were given. So there's no expectation that the money that was lent is still here, physically here. So the hotzanit, no. So in that case, it makes sense that it's not in hand. And since it's not in hand, when he takes the shvuah is in lieu of the repayment of that money. Aval pikadon, when it comes to a pikadon, birshute demare koi. Pikadon never leaves the hands of the original owner. No matter where it is found, it belongs to the original owner. He may not be able to access it. He may not have control over it, but the original owner's ownership still exists over this item. With a loan, that's not the case. You have a right of collection. You have a right to go to the Loewe and demand payment, but you don't have as physical ownership over anything. By a pikadon, that's not true. When you deposit something, that item remains your item. It's not that it's left your possession, left your ownership. It's your ownership, just somebody else is watching it for you. And therefore, in the case of a pikadon, even if there is a shvuah taken, it shouldn't be that the shvua discharges the obligation, because the owner could say, that's my pikadon. I never released or relinquished control over the pikadon. It should come back to me. And so therefore, the shvua should not discharge an obligation. A shvua can take care of, I would call it, an intangible or indebtedness that you have to another party. What it can't do is change the fact that someone owns an item. It can't change that reality. And so over here, by a pikadon, it shouldn't be that the case is dismissed with the shvuah, and there's no longer a claim here anymore. So Gemara says, "Va'elukim amai Rav afilu pikadon." He's going to say, "Wait a minute, elukim means like b'shvuah." That Rav said it even by a pikadon. "Dechiktiv kra b'pikadon ktiv," because the pasuk that we're quoting is from the pasuk or from the parshiyah of Shomrim, which says, "La'kach balav lo yishalem." So it's a case of a shomer or a case of pikadon. So to say that Rav's statement only applies to a milveh and not a pikadon seems strange if the source comes from the psukim by a pikadon. Yotiv Rav Nachman v'kamer l'hashmatita. So Rav Nachman was sitting down saying over what we were just discussing. Etevei Rav Acha bar Nume l'Rav Nachman. So Rav Acha bar Nume challenges Rav Nachman. Heichan pikdoni. He says, where is the item that I deposited with you? Amalei avat. He said, it was lost. Sorry, it was here for a while, but then it got lost. I don't know where it is. Mashbiach ani. So then the owner says to him, take a shvua. I am asking you to take a shvua to that effect. Va'amar amein. The shomer says amein, meaning affirmation of the shvua. Ve'edim, edim oto shachlo. So the edim come up and say that he himself ate it. It wasn't lost. It was lost in his belly. He had consumed it. Mishalem et akeren. Over there he pays the keren because he was incriminated by edim. Remember that a shvua that denies owing money or is a kfirat mamon only obligates you in keren, chomesh, and asham, gzelot, when you are modeh, when you admit to that fact. But if you are incriminated by edim, over there, then you're chayav bonsin, you're chayav for the keren, but the other penalties do not apply to you. So over here, where the edim are the ones that incriminated him, then he pays the keren. Hodeh me'atzmo, and then if he admits of his own volition, mishalem keren v'chomesh v'asham. You pay keren chomesh v'asham. So now, what we see from this is we're talking about a pikadon. And in the case of pikadon, we're saying that there is a shvu'ah that is taken. And even after the shvu'ah is taken, we pay keren. If edim show up and say and incriminate him over here, despite the fact that there was a shvu'ah given, he still has to pay the keren. That goes against what we saw from Rab before, that when you have a shvu'ah that is taken, that discharges the monetary obligation in that case. He shouldn't have to pay anything. Then when the edim show up and say something, or in the case where he admits himself that that is the case. Now, Rashi over here had notes that there is a difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. And he says that Rav Acha bar Nume is really challenging Rav Nachman from the first part of this Braita, not the second part of this Braita. And that is because Rav admits, in the case of Modeh, in the case of where you admit of your own volition to the crime or to the false Shvu'ah, then even Rav agrees there that you pay the Keren, the Chomesh, and the Asham Gzelot. The reason being that the Pasuk says, Ve'yishivet HaGzela, that you have to return that which you stole. And that's in a context of a Shvu'ah. I mean that the whole Parshiyah in Vayikra Hei is written around a case where he takes a Shvu'ah and a false Shvu'ah. And despite that, the Torah says afterwards, Ve'yishivet HaGzela. So there it's clear that despite the Shvu'ah, you still have to give back Ve'yishivet HaGzela. You have to give it back. So in that scenario, there's no question, even Rav agrees that the Shvu'ah will not suffice. The only time we have a question is where Edim show up. I mean, he takes the Shvu'ah is accepted, and then he's incriminated by Edim. In that case, Rav said that the Shvu'ah should suffice, he should not be Chayav Keren. The other hand, the Braita here says that when he's Toein Tanat Avad, and then we find out that he was lying and that he really ate it, he has to pay up. So that's what Rashi claims over here, that that is the question to rise from the first half of this Braita, not the second half of the Braita. Tosafot quotes Rashi and says, V'ein Nira, says that he doesn't think that's right, because he says later on, we're going to see in the Gemara, that we find the Gemara challenging Rav from cases of Modeh, cases where the person admitted of their own volition. And therefore he says, V'nira da'vadai pshita, d'lo amar b'toyin tanat ganav, v'nishba'u ba'idim she'i patur. He says the only case where it's clear that Rav didn't say it is in a case where his shomer claims that it was stolen. And then after he claimed that it was stolen, we find out that he himself stole it, he himself ate it, edim show up. In that case, he would be chayav kefel. The reason that Rav can't be saying it in that case is, otherwise, how do you ever have a case of kefel by Toein Tanat Ganav? By definition, Toein Tanat Ganav involves a shvu'ah. As soon as he takes the shvu'ah, if you're telling me that you've discharged the obligation and he doesn't owe any more money, then how do you ever have a case where he has to pay kefel afterwards? So that's the case where it's clear that Rav agrees that it will not replace the monetary obligation. That's between Tanat Ganav. But in the case of Hodeh Ma'atzmo, there he would think that possibly, we would thought that according to Rav, that you would be patur. Because then we'll explain that case where he has to pay in a case which we'll see in a second, which was kafatz v'nishba. In a case where it wasn't done under the auspices of Beit Din, but the shvu'ah was taken outside of Beit Din. Once you do that, you can have a case where he took a false shvu'ah. He still will be chayav for his own admission, And yet it does not conflict with Rav's position because Rav said it only in the context of a Beit Din Shvua, not a Shvua that's taken out of Beit Din. So Tosfot says you could come up with a scenario where Hudei Matzmo would result in payment, despite the fact that he took a Shvua, because it's extrajudicial, it's outside of the Beit Din that the Shvua was taken. But by Toyin Tanat Kefel, the only way to be Chayiv in Kefel is to take a Shvua and Beit Din. And that Shvua and Beit Din results in the payment of Kefel. It's clear there that the Shvua is not taken in lieu of payment. So that would be the one exception to Rav's rule. So then, Amarlei, Rav Nachman, Hocha by Eskinan, Kon Shinishpa Chutz the Beit Din. Rav Nachman says, no problem here. He took the Shvua outside of Beit Din. Rav only said a statement where the Shvua was taken in Beit Din, because the term that is used in the Torah in those parashiyot is Elohim. Elohim refers to the judges. And so the Shvua taken in the context of judges is something that is binding to the point where it's taken in lieu of payment. But a Shvua that's taken outside of Beit Din is not covered by that statement of Rav. So according to Rashi, that's the answer to the Reisha case. According to the Baal Yatosafot, it's the answer to the Reisha and the Seifa case, that the Shvua was taken out of Beit Din. And that's why this guy is making payment over here, even though they took a Shvua. So Amalei, Ihochi, Ema Seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of that Breita? Heichan Piktoni, where is the item I deposit with you? Amalo, Nignav, said it was stolen. Mashbiachani says, take a Shvua to that effect. Vamaramein. And again, he responds in the affirmative. Ve'edim edim otoshi ginavo. And we have edim that say that the Shomer himself was the one who stole it. Mishalem tashlume kefel. There he pays kefel. Ode me'atzmo, if he admits himself that he's the one who kept it, that he had withheld the return of the item. Mishalem kerem v'chomesh v'asham. V'isag adatcha chutz de Beit Din. If you say that the Shvua was taken outside of Beit Din, mi'ika kefel. There is no kefel. Again, the parshia of kefel by the ganav is written in the context of the parshiot of the shomrim. And in parshiot of shomrim, it uses the term Elohim, referring to the dayanim. So only in a case where there was a shvua taken in Toyin Tanat ganav, in the context of Beit Din, by Beit Din, then you result in a paying of kefel afterwards. But if it's outside of Beit Din, then it does not result in a payment of kefil. You might be chayav for the keren, but you will not be chayav kefil. In order to be chayav kefil, this has to be a shvuat Beit Din. So now you have a problem. The ratio you're telling me was outside of Beit Din. The sefer were compelled to say is inside of Beit Din, because otherwise you wouldn't have an obligation of kefil. Now once it's inside of Beit Din, that might influence what we think about the first half of the braita. That should also be inside of Beit Din, and then Rav Nachman's answer goes away. So Amalei, so he says back to Rabacha bar Yumei, Yachilna l'shnui alecha, I could answer you. Reisha chutz de Beit Din, Yisefa be Beit Din, ein achanami. The first half of the Brayta is talking about outside of Beit Din. The second half of the Brayta is talking about inside of Beit Din. And again, it's not a question on Rav here, because by the case of Kefel, Rav has to admit that the Shvua does not suffice, because otherwise you'll never have a case of Kefel by Toyin Tanat Ganav. Miu shinuya dechika lo mishanin alecha. I'm not going to give you this difficult or far-fetched answer over here that says that the Breita, I could do it, but I'm not going to do that. I'll give you a better answer. I could have answered, yes, half the Breita is talking about outside of Beit Din, the other half in Beit Din, but rather, idividi be Beit Din. The whole Breita is speaking about a case of in Beit Din. Velo kasha. It's not a problem. Kansha kafats, kansha lo kafats. It's a question of how the Shvua was precipitated. Did the Dayanim, under the procedures of Beit Din, ask him to take a Shvua, and therefore it's considered to be a Shvuat Beit Din? Or did the guy voluntarily jump in and say, I'll take a Shvua, and he takes a Shvua without the procedures of Beit Din, without Beit Din demanding it of him? So within the context of Beit Din, you can simulate a Shvua that is outside of Beit Din, which is in a case where he jumps the gun and takes a Shvua before Beit Din can demand it from him. Now, even though, as Rashi notes over here, you're still setting up the Breita in two cases. You're setting up the first half of the Breita as kafats, he jumped the gun and took the Shvua, and the second half, below kafats, where Beit Din imposed the Shvua on him. But nevertheless, he says, v'nechel el ukmei betray gavnei u'b'chad duchta, he'd rather set it up in two scenarios in one location, v'lo l'ukma b'shnei mikomot, and not put it in two places, which is outside of Beit Din and inside of Beit Din. He feels that that's more far-fetched, to say one case is inside of Beit Din, one side is outside of Beit Din, rather than to say they're both inside of Beit Din, But the scenarios are different. He's more comfortable with that, or feels that that's less of a stretch in explaining the Braita. And again, as I noted, the Seifa is not a problem for Rav, even though it's a case where he took a Shva in the context of Beit Din, with the demand of Beit Din, because it's Toin Tanat Ganav, which again we say is an exception to the rule, because it's clear there, the Toin Tanat Ganav, he pays Kefil, and the only way to do that is in the context of a Shvua. Tosfos says, according to this answer, why is it that the Braita needed to say that the case was Toin Tanat Avad? It could even be a case of Toin Tanat Ganav in the Reisha now. Because he's not Chayav Kefil by Toin Tanat Ganav when he's Kofetz V'Nishba. Because it's only when Beit Din imposes the Shvua that there's Kefil. That is a slight question on this answer as to why the Braita needed to say Toin Tanat Avad. Amalei Rami Bar Chamala Rav Nachman. Michtei Derav Lo Sfira Lecha. You don't hold of this din of Derav. Mashchuni Nafshecha Derav Lama Lecha. Why are you taking so much trouble to protect the position of Rav? I mean, you don't paskin like Rav. You don't believe that Rav's din is correct. But nevertheless, you're defending Rav. Amalei, so he says back to him, the Frusha de the Rav. I'm coming to explain Rav's position. The Rav, that's how he would answer or how he would deal with the Mishnah, with the Braitot that we are bringing. This is the way that he would deal with it. It doesn't mean that I paskin like him. It doesn't mean that I necessarily subscribe to his position. I'm just saying that his position is tenable here, despite the fact that it looks like these Braitot argue on the position of Rav. Vaha Rav Krak Amar. What do you mean? Rav brings a pasuk. So what do you mean we're trying to explain the Mishnayot or the Braita that are going to Rav? Rav has a pasuk that backs him up. So how is it that Rav Nachman is simply coming to explain Rav in the Mishnayot or Braitot? What does he do with the pasuk that Rav brought? Amrei. He says you could deal with that. Kra l'chol nishbaim shebetorah nishbaim velo mishalmim hu da'ata. We have a different limud from the pasuk that Rav uses. The pasuk says, v'lakach be'alav, Vilo Yishalim. The Balim will accept the Shvua, and the party will not have to pay. From there we set up a paradigm by which, whenever you're taking a Shvua, the Shvua is to release you from an obligation. The only Shvua that you have in the Torah is a Shvua where you are obligated to pay money, and in lieu of that payment, you give the Shvua. So that we learn out from here. Not that it makes it that when you take the Shvua, you're no longer obligated or there's no longer a claim against you. But simply, the only scenario where there is a Shvua in the Torah is when the party that's obligated has to take the Shvua. V'lakach be'alav v'lo yishalem. The Balim will accept the Shvua and then they will not pay. Mishalav l'shalem hu nishba. The one who's obligated to pay is the one who takes the Shvua. And that is a principle which we'll see again in the Mishnayot in Shvuot. But it is a hard and fast principle that the only shvot that you have in the Torah are nishba'im v'niftarim. You take a shvua and then you are patur. Kol nishba v'notel. Anytime there's a shvua that you take based on your shvua, that's an institution midrabanan. So that's how he uses the pasuk of Rav. And since he uses the pasuk of Rav for that limud, he doesn't have it available for the limud that Rav has. And that's why Rav Nachman disagrees with Rav, even though he's defending his position within the Mishnayot, the Braitot. Meiti Rav Hamnuna. So now Rav Hamnuna, who is a Talmid of Rav, challenges Rav's position. Hishbi alav chamisha pi'amim. It should be grammatically chamesh pi'amim. He took a shvua 5 times on the same obligation. Ben bifnei beitin, ben shalo bifnei beitin. Whether it was in front of beitin, whether it was outside of beitin. V'kafar alav. And in each of those cases, he denies the obligation. Chayav al kol achat ve'achat. He is chayav in each one of these scenarios. Keren, chomesh, and asham gzelot. V'am Rabbi Shimon, matam. What's the reason that he's chayav over and over again? Because if he simply takes a shvua the first time denying it, when he takes a second shvua, the second shvua is not meaningful. That's a shvua la shvua, or basically something that has no meaning or no bearing in the case anymore because he's already denied the claim. To deny it a second time under oath doesn't change the fact that he already denied it under oath and does not add on any additional obligations, at least vis-a-vis having to pay Karen Bechomish and Hashem Meg Zelot. It might be a Shvuat Shav, it might be a Shvuat She'enet Zricha, but nevertheless, why is it that here he's 5 times, he's Chayav? Ho'il V'yachol L'chzor L'odot. The reason being is that because he could re-obligate himself in each of these scenarios. So when there's a claim against him and he denies the claim and takes a shvua to that effect, if he so chooses, he could admit to the fact that he lied. It says that he could have admit to the fact that he lied. When he takes the next shvua, that next shvua is actually a denial of a monetary claim. It's a monetary claim that doesn't exist yet, but has in potential to exist. You can't say that he jumped the gun and took the shvua because it's ishbi alav tani, which is that they imposed on him. So he didn't take it voluntarily. Chutz the beitin lo matzi damart. You can't say it was outside of beitin because it says bifnei beitin tani. It says chutz and bifnei beitin. It means that even in the face of beitin, it would be the case. So in that scenario, the answers that Rav Nachman gave before in the previous breita won't work here. Can't be chutz the beitin. Can't be bekafatz. That means it's under the auspices of beitin. They imposed a shvua on him. Despite that fact, he is chayav over and over again, the chiddush of Rabbi Shimon, that despite the fact that there was a denial and no admission or no edim showed up, despite all of that, the potential to be chayav again makes it that as if you have a renewed obligation each case, it's like a refresh each time, and every time you take the shvua, you're going to be obligated again and again. That's against Rav's position. So now it's in Beitin, and he's taking a shvua in Beitin, and despite the fact that he took a shvua in Beitin, he can still obligate himself in the money if he's hodeh, if he admits it. Or if Edim come along and incriminate him, in both of those scenarios, he would owe the money again. And therefore, when he takes another shvua, that additional shvua is a denial of a monetary claim. So even though he said it five times, he took a shvua, and in between, nothing changed. He did absolutely nothing in between. Each one of those will obligate him Keren Chomesh and Asham, because between each shvua, there was a potential that he could admit to the fact that he lied, and that would give him another monetary obligation. Or Edim could come and say that he is chayav, and that would reestablish the monetary obligation. So that potential is enough to make it that you're taking a shvua that is denying a monetary claim. But what you see from here is a problem for Rav, which is here you see a shvua taken, despite the fact that the shvua is taken and accepted in Beit Din, because it says hishbi alav. Despite all of that, he still could be obligated to pay, and that means it's against Rav. So who motiv lav and who meferik lav? Rav Nuna asked the question, and he answered it himself. Litzadim ktani. When it says in the Braita these different terms, it is bifurcated. Hishbi alav chutz the beitin. They imposed a shvua on him outside of beitin. Ube beitin kafatz. And if he was in Beitin, he jumped the gun. So both of those scenarios, as already saw from Menachem before, don't result in a ptur or the shvua being accepted in lieu of the money. Because in both of those cases, it wasn't done under the auspices of Beitin with the demand of Beitin. So what he says is that even though it says the flow of the Braita is bifnei Beitin, shalom bifnei Beitin, but he says it doesn't mean that all scenarios are playing out that way, but rather when it says mashbi alav, that was a case of chutz the beitin, outside of beitin, they imposed the shvua on him. The case of in beitin was a case for kafatz, where he jumped, and the mishbi alav is not modifying the bifnei beitin. So therefore you have scenarios in which Rav would agree that that type of shvua does not discharge your obligation, because it's not a shvua in beitin demanded by beitin. Here Tosva notes that hishbi alav was ayidei beitin. The Gemara before says that mashbiacha ani is mashma shekabatz v'ishbio. Tosva says that mashbiacha ani, even though it's an imposition of a shvua, there it could be a case of kafatz v'ishbio, and does not necessarily mean that beitin imposed it. On the other hand, the language of hishbi alav means more of an official beitin imposition of a shvua. Because otherwise you would have the same question we're asking here on the previous Braita, which is Hishbiachani, sounds like someone, an outside party, is the one generating the Shvua. So Tosfot says you have to explain that these languages are different, that Hishbialav is different than Mashbiacha Ani. Meitiv Rova. So now Rova also challenges Rav's position. Balabayit Shita'an Tanat Ganav Bipikadom. Balabayit makes a claim that it was stolen from him when he has something entrusted to him. Vinishba, and he took a Shvua to that effect. Ve'odeh, and then he admitted to it. Ubau edim, and edim also came. So now, im ad shelo bau edim hodeh, if he admitted to this before the edim showed up, mishalem keren v'chomesh v'asham, he pays the keren because he stole the item from the balim, He pays a chomesh because he admitted it of his own volition that he took a false shvuah, denying a claim. And he brings an Hashem gzelot for that same reason. V'im, and he does not pay kefel over here, even though it's tuein tanat ganav, because we have a principle, modeh b'knas is patur. So since he did it of his own volition and admitted to it, he doesn't pay the knas of kefel. On the other hand, im mishibawa edim hodeh, if he only admits to this wrongdoing after the edim show up, mishalem tashlumei kefel, then he has to pay kefel, v'asham, and the asham. Now, the kefel includes the keren. We saw earlier in the Masechta, the kefel also includes the chomesh, because subsumed in kefel is the chomesh itself as well. And he has to bring the asham gzelot. The asham gzelot derives from his modeh, that he admitted to it. His admission after the edim come does not make it modeh b'knas, because the knas was already imposed on him before that by the fact that the edim showed up and incriminated him. So here you see that, despite the fact that he took a shvuah, he's still obligated, both in the case where he admits of his own volition, as well as in the case where he's incriminated by edim. Now here you see in Rava's case here, he's modeh in both instances. Even when the edim come, he's also modeh. This is Tosafot's proof that Rav even says it by modeh, and that's why Rava is challenging him, because Rav only says it by modeh when the shvuah is taken outside of Beit Din. But if it's taken inside of Beit Din, Rav thinks that you have discharge or obligation in the case of hodeh. Over here, you cannot make a claim that it was either outside of Beit Din or he jumped the gun inside of Beit Din, because it says kefel tani. And as we said before, the only way to be chayav kefel is to take a shvuat ha-dayanim, to take a shvuah that is imposed by the dayanim on the individual, and then to make a toein tanat ganav and make a claim that it was stolen falsely. That's the only way you shomer is going to be chayav kefel. But that's the case. The shvuah here is clearly in Beit Din, under the auspices of Beit Din, demanded by Beit Din. And yet, you see, after he's caught, either because he admits to be lying under oath, or he is incriminated by Edim, in both those cases, we say that he's chayav to pay. That's against Rav's position again. Ela amar Rava, kol hodeh, lo shna toein tanat avad, lo shna toein tanat ganav, lo amar Rav. Now Rava makes a statement which now limits Rav's position and says, anytime there's an admission by the party that he swore falsely, doesn't matter what his claim was up front, whether his claim was that it was lost or his claim was that it was stolen, and then he admits that the shvua that he took to that effect was false, that case Rav says the shvua does not bind. Daktiv, because the pasuk says, vihit vada, that when he admits to it, debay shlume keren v'chomesh, he must pay a keren v'chomesh when he makes an admission. So now, here the Gemara does what Rashi said before, which is that Rav says that the psukim say vit vada, and that vit vada, despite the fact that we know that he had a false claim here of a shvua, it says when he admits to making that false claim, that that results in keren v'chomesh, despite the fact that there was a shvua there. We know the case is a case of a shvua, and despite that, when he makes an admission, that admission obligates him in keren v'chomesh. That shows you that Rav's din does not apply in that case. Toin tanat ganav ubao edim nami lo amar Rav. In addition, and we've said this all along, that by the case where he makes a claim for ganav and then edim come and incriminate him, there too Rav says that the shvua does not discharge your obligation. Taktiv tashlumei kefel, because over there it says he has to pay kefel. The only way he can pay kefel is if he took a shvua. Without a shvua, he would not be chayav kefel with toin tanat ganav. So kikamar, so then when is Rav's position valid? Kigon shetoein tanat avad v'nishba v'lo hodeh. It's a case where he makes a claim that it was lost. He's a shomer, making a claim that it was lost. Takes a shvuah to that effect, does not admit to the wrongdoing, and then edim show up and incriminate him. In that case, Rav says, the shvuah is accepted, and you do not have to make payment anymore. It was in lieu of payment, you have no claim against this individual. He'll have to deal again with the issue of the shvuat sheker, which is a serious infraction. We know that swearing God's names falsely is a very severe violation, and he'll have to deal with that. But in terms of the ta'ana, or the claim against him, that's been dropped through the shvuat. Now, Azal Rav Gamda, v'amar l'shmaitata kamei de Rav Ashi. So Rav Gamda went and said over what Rovo basically just said now to Rav Ashi, saying that there are limitations on Rav's position, and those limitations will make it that Rav can fit into all these breitot, all these mishnayot, because we've now limited Rav's statement to a single case of Toyin Tanat Avad, where you took a Shvua. So then Rav Ashi says back, Amalei, Hashta, Uma Rav Amnuna, Talmidei de Rav, Rav Amnuna, who is a Talmid of Rav, Biyoda Damar Rav Hodeh, and he knows that Rav didn't said it by Hodeh, become motive Hodeh, that Rav must have said it even in a case of admission, and he asks him a question from a case of Hodeh. Vat Amart Hodeh lo Amar Rav, and now you're going to tell me that Rav didn't say it by Hodeh? Rava, in order to solve the problem of the Braita, said Rav never made a statement by a case of self-admission. Okay, that's interesting, because Rav Hamnuna, who is a Talmud of Rav, challenged Rav from a Braita that includes a case of Hodeh, of admission. So why didn't he give the same answer that Rava gave? Why wouldn't he just say, okay, this is not a question on Rav, because Rav didn't say it by Hodeh. That's not what he does. He has to come up with a way, let's study him, Tani, to fit the Braita into Rav's position. If it was really true, like Rava said, that Rav never said this by Hodeh, then Rav Hamnuna would never have a question on Rav. The fact that he has a question on Rav shows you that Rav Hamnuna believes that Rav said it even by Hodeh, and he's a Talmud of Rav. He has a lot more weight over here, and I think that what Rav is saying is incorrect. So Amalei Rav Acha Savla Rav Ashi, Rav Hamnuna, Hocha Kakashile. Now, this is the question that was coming out of Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna's question was not deriving from the case of Hodeh, but rather from this, Iamart Bishlama, if you say Nishba Kiatu Edim Chayev, that when he takes a Shvua and the Edim come that he is Chayav, Amatu Lohochi Mechayvin Le Kurban Ashvua Batraita. Then I understand why when he takes the second Shvua, he is Chayav again. Ho V'yachol Achzor Olohodot, because he can come back and make an admission. Iamart Kiatu Edim Patur. If you say that when Edim come and incriminate over here, he'd be patur, mi ika mide dilu ate sade umasade be patur, you'll end up with that difficult inconsistency in halacha, which is that if Edim show up, patur, and then if he admits on his own, he'll be chayav, v'anam niku v'nei chayvo karbana shvua, and we're going to make him chayav for shvua, ho v'yachol akzor lehodot, just because he can admit it, hashta mi alohodi, at this point in time, he has yet to admit it. So what Rav Acha Savla says to Rav Ashi is, if you're talking about the fact or the possibility that Edim can come and then incriminate him, then in that case, if he was incriminated, he'd be Chayav Mamon. If he admits it, he'd be Chayav. So in both of those cases, it would result in a monetary obligation. If he takes a Shvua denying it, that's a denial of a monetary obligation, even though it has yet to happen. On the other hand, if you say that when Edim really show up, he's Patur, because of Rav's din says if you take a shvuah, then there's no longer an obligation. That means if Edim show up, you're going to be patur. But if he admits it, then he'll be chayav, the monetary obligation. And then we'll say, based on that, it could have been that he would have admitted. That creates the monetary obligation. And therefore, when he takes a shvuah, it's a denial of a monetary claim. Now there's an additional obligation to pay. That seems much more far-fetched and inconsistent. Because you have two possible outcomes over here. You have a possible outcome that Edim show up, and he won't be Chayav Mamon. You have a possible outcome that he admits to it, and he would be Chayav Mamon. So those are two possibilities. Why are you favoring one outcome over the other outcome? If in both scenarios he would be Chayav Mamon, then I understand when he takes the next Shvuah that he's Chayav, because he's making denial of a monetary claim. But in a scenario where one case will be Patur, one case will be Chayav, over there, you can't make a claim, then, oh, it's as if he has a monetary obligation. It's not as if, because there's another scenario where he would not be chayav. And so therefore, until it actually happens, we're not going to make him chayav. And that's what he says here. If he has yet to admit, there's no monetary obligation there yet. Because it's equally plausible that Edim will show up and make him patur. So that was the nature of Rav Nuna's question. Rav Nuna is not questioning the idea of Hodeh. That he says that, yeah, Rav says that by Hodeh it doesn't matter. His question is from the other part of the Braita, which is that if you are right about this, Rav's position, then you're going to end up in scenarios where Edim will make him patur, his admission will make him chayav. That in and of itself is not implausible, but then you can't say it's as if he has a monetary obligation. Because as if assumes that that will be the general outcome or the most likely outcome. Over here, that's not the most likely outcome. Edim could show up and incriminate him and he'll be patur. So for that reason, he challenged Rav from that Braita, even though he might agree to Rava's principle here that Rav never said this by Modet, where he admitted of his own volition. Rav would agree if you admit of your own volition, you're Chayav. Problem is that that's too narrow a case to assume that the shvua that he takes afterwards is a denial of a monetary obligation. And as Rashi says, or the way Rashi formulates it is, the lav mamono, it's not a monetary obligation, sharei eino yacholo tzio be'edim, since you can't extract it with edim. So I call something a monetary obligation if you could make a demand for payment, if you could extract it. Over here, there's no way to extract it unless he admits. And his admission, we can't extract an admission. So for that reason, it would not be considered to be monetary denial. And therefore, I wouldn't understand why five shvuot would result in five ashamot and five keren b'chomesh. So that's why he questioned Rav's position, and that's what he answered, that tzadim mit ketani. So now the Gemara gives a number of principles. Amar Rav Chiya ba'av, Amar Rav Yochanan, atuayin tanat ganav b'pikadon, mishalem tashlumei kefel. Again, this is a din that is midoraita. There's no chiddush in what he's saying over here. Tavach u'machar mishalem tashlumei arba v'chamishan. Now, the second half of his statement is the chiddush, which is that if he's toveach u'mocher, if he shechted it or sold it, then he pays four or five times. That is not written in the Torah. So that's the chiddush here of this statement of Chir Ba'aba, is that not only is Toein Tanat Ganav subject to Kefel, which is in the Torah, but he's also subject to Arba'a v'chamisha. Ho'il uv'ganav mishalem tashlumei Kefel. So just like a Ganav pays Kefel when he steals and he is caught, the Toein Tanat Ganav mishalem tashlumei Kefel, and similarly a Shomer that makes a claim of theft and then is caught stealing it, he pays Kefel. Maganav shu mishalem kefel tavachu machar mishalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha. Just like a regular ganav, if he steals and is caught, he pays kefel. And if he shechs it or sells it, he's chayav four or five times. Af toein tanat ganav v'pikadon. Similarly, a shomer that is entrusted with an item and makes a claim of theft and then is found to have stolen it himself, shu mishalem tashlumei kefel, when he pays kefel. Tavachu machar mishalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha. Then when he also be shechted it or sold it, he'd be subject to four or five times payment. So in essence, what we're doing is extrapolating the din from ganav to toein tanat ganav. Gemara says, is that really a good extrapolation? Mala ganav shekei mishalem tashlumei kefel shelo bishvua. A ganav can precipitate the need to pay kefel without ever taking a shvua. Tomar be toein tanat ganav shein mishalem tashlumei kefel elo bishvua. But a toein tanat ganav can only pay kefel under oath. Because that's the only way that he can get to the same scenario as a ganav. So who says that the din should be the same? The din of a ganav might be much more severe because of the fact that he's chayav, even not under oath. Whereas, toein tanat ganav is only chayav under oath, so maybe you can't extrapolate the din. Where it says, amrei hakeshei, ve'im yishivim ala hakesha. It's a juxtaposition of these two dinim together in the Torah that tells us whatever is true by the ganav is true by toein tanat ganav. Hekesh supersedes logic. It's not a logical argument. It's the fact that the Torah put them together teaches you that one din that applies here also applies there. And therefore, despite the possible lack of logic, nevertheless, we say whatever is true by ganav is true by toein tanat ganav. Mar says, anicha leman damar, chad b'ganav, v'chad b'toein tanat ganav. This goes back to what we said earlier in the Masechta, that there's a machloket as to how we know about toein tanat ganav. Which is the pasuk says im yimatzei aganav, and then the pasuk afterwards says im lo yimatzei aganav. So everybody agrees that im lo yimatzei aganav is talking about a case of toein tanat ganav. There was a machloket about whether im yimatzei aganav was speaking about toein tanat ganav or speaking about ganav atzmo. So according to the one who says it's speaking about ganav atzmo, then I found my hekesh. My hekesh is im yimatzei aganav, and then im lo yimatzei aganav. So those two are juxtaposed to each other in the Torah. One about ganav atzmo, and one about toein tanat ganav. And that's where the hekesh is from. But according to the one who says that im yimatzei aganav and im lo yimatzei aganav are both speaking about toein tanat ganav, where is this hekesh to ganav atzmo? He learns out ganav atzmo from the psukim by machteret im yimatzei timatzei biyodo hagneva mishor v'ad chomor atzei chayim shnayim yishalim. So that is a pasuk that's nowhere near the pasuk of toein tanat ganav. So where does this hekesh exist, or where does this limud come from? Gemara says, that works well, the one who says, chad ganav, choyim toein tanat ganav, shapir, el lamanda amar, that says, hi, im yimatzei aganav, im yilo yimatzei aganav, tavayu betoein tanat ganav, they both are speaking about a case of toein tanat ganav. Ma'ika the meimar, what can you say in that case? Gemara says, amrei ganav, ha ganav. The extra hey there, imatzei haganav, that hey ayidia is a riboy. And that riboy comes to tell you that the din, whatever applies by a ganav, also applies to a toin tenat ganav, because he's considered to be haganav, like the ganav. The ganav is the regular ganav, who's chayav, kefel and arba b'chamisha. So the toin tenat ganav has the same din as haganav, the ganav. Now, etve Rabbi Chir ba'ava, the Rabbi Yochanan. So now, Rabbi Chir ba'ava quotes this in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, but now we have that Rabbi Chir ba'ava also challenged Rabbi Yochanan. It said, Heichan shuri, where is my shore that I deposit with you? Nignav, said it was stolen. Mashbiachani, I want you to take a oath to that effect. Vamaramein, in response in the affirmative. Vayidim eidim oto sha'achalo. And we have eidim that say that he actually ate it up. So, this wording, as you can see on the side here, is not exactly found in the Mishnah. So that makes it possible that he's quoting a Braita here, not a Mishnah, even though the spirit of the Braita is exactly like that of the Mishnah. There happen to be words here and there that are not found in the Mishnah. So it's a question if he's quoting the Mishnah with some fill-in, or is he quoting a Braita? So then it says, Mishalem Tashlumei Kefil. He pays double there. V'ahacha, D.F. Shalik Zayt Basar Below Shchita. How did he eat it unless he shechted it? And if he shechted it, then it was a case of shechita. He should be chayav arba b'chamisha. Why is he only chayav kefel? Tani mishalem tashlumei kefel. Tashlumei kefel in, he pays double. Tashlumei dal v'hei, lo. But four or five times he does not pay. Gemara says, achem ayaskinan, kigon shachalo nevela. He ate it as a nevela. Who says that he shechted it? This guy's a ganav. Who says that he is a practicing, upstanding Jew here? So yeah, he stole it. He also ate it without having shkita as it being a nevela. So Gemara says, "Lishnei kugon she'achalo treifa." Why doesn't he say treifa instead of nevela? Rabbi Meir damar shkita she'enu ruya shma shkita, because he wants to also include the shita of Rabbi Meir. We had a machloket earlier in the Masechta. Shkita she'enu ruya. If you do a shkita that doesn't result in an animal that can be eaten, is that considered to be a good shkita? According to Rabbi Shimon, it's ena shkita. According to Rabbi Meir, it is a shchita. So in order to avoid that machloket, he didn't say treifa. Because treifa would be considered a shchita, according to Rabbi Meir. And then you'd be back to square one, which is, oh, if he did shchita, he should be chayav arba b'chamisha. So that's why we specifically said nevela, which means that there was no shchita done here whatsoever. Galish lanei beben pkua. Why does he have to be eating a nevela? Maybe he ate an animal that does not require shchita. A ben pkua is a fetus that is found inside the mother after the shechita of the mother. So after the mother is shechted and the mother is kshera, along with the mother, the fetus that is found inside is also nikshar, becomes kasher ayide the mother. So normally this would only take place if it's far along in the pregnancy when he shechs the animal, otherwise the fetus that's inside won't be viable. So over there we have a machloket with regards to ben pkua. What is the din of that animal that is, quote-unquote, born after the shechita? Does that animal have a status of being shechted already? Because he was yerachimo, he was inside his mother and a part of his mother when she was shechted, and she's muteret, he got that same heter at the same time. And therefore, you would not need to shecht this animal. And there's even a position, Reb Shimon Shizuri, who says that even if the animal's 5 years old, you don't have to shecht it, you can go out and eat it without shechting it, because it was mutar yedeimo. There are other opinions that you can never have a ben kuga, you always have to shecht it. There's some opinions, depends how old the animal was when it was a fetus. Because depending on how independent it was from the mother, even though it was in utero at the time. But there you do have a case where you can come up with a scenario where you can eat the animal without having to do shechita. And that would avoid the problem of arba chamishav, and also avoid him having to eat nevela. Where it says, ki Rabbi Meir, damar ben pkua ta'on shechita. Because it's following, he also wants to follow the shita of Rabbi Meir, that a ben pkua requires shechita. If he had said it was a ben pkua, then again he would limit the number of tanaim that can subscribe to this explanation. So lishnene kolod shamad bedin. Why don't we say the case here is where he was taken to court already. Va'amru lo, and they said to him, tsei tein lo. And beitin paskin, pay him. You're done now, you owe the kefel. Da'amar rova, tsei tein lo. If Beit already paskin that he has to make the payment, and they demand him to make the payment, tavachu machar, if he then shechs it or sells it, patur. He is patur from arba v'chamisha. My time, why? Came into paske the milte, since they already ended the previous issue, v'tavachu machar, havi gazlan. We've refreshed, restart over here, And now he's a gazlan, not a ganav anymore, because he's stealing it in broad daylight. It's obvious that he owes the money here, despite the fact he's taking it, shechting it, or selling it. So that makes him into a gazlan, no longer under the gneva that he originally took. I mean, the original gneva is now terminated with the psak of Beit Din and the demand that he pays. Now if he does something, he's a gazlan and not a ganav anymore. That won't result in Avraham Chamishah. That would be a good answer for Rabbi Yochanan in explaining this braita. Gazlan, no mishalim, tashlumei arba v'chamisha. We know that a gazlan doesn't pay kefil, a gazlan doesn't pay arba v'chamisha. On the other hand, chayavat aliten lo, if Beit Din says you are obligated to pay, but they have yet to give the psak halacha, go and do it, then tavachu machar chayav. If he does it tvicha mechira, then he's chayav. So my taima. What's the reason behind Rova's position here that he says chayav niten lo, that you still consider it to be a ganav and you pay 4 or 5 times? As long as there's no psak Beit Din, not a final decision in the case, you're still under the auspices of the original Gneva. And that Tvicha Mechira will result in 4 or 5 times. So why didn't he use that as the answer? Rabbi Yochanan could have answered that way, that they already Kishamad Bidin. So Amrei, why didn't he say this? V'li Tamech Lishnene Bishutaf Shitavach. Why don't you say the case here is a partner that shechted it? They were partners in crime. They stole it together. But then one of the two partners decides to shecht it. Shalo midat chavero, without permission, without the knowledge of his co-conspirator over here. Over there, we already learned during the Masech, he doesn't pay 4 or 5 times, because we said you pay 4 or 5 times, not half 4 or 5 times. Because over here, he's only shechting his piece, not the piece of his fellow co-conspirator, or ganav, because he doesn't have permission to do it. If he had permission to do it, we already had a riboy earlier in the Masech that there is shliach the dvar avero over here, and he would be chayav 4 or 5 times. But here, he doesn't have permission. He's not going to be chayav 4 or 5 times. That's another example where you could have a shechita that doesn't result in 4 or 5 times. Ella, chadam yitrei v'tlata nakat. They gave you one out of 2 or 3 answers that you could have given to explain this braita that it won't be a problem for Rabbi Yochanan's position. Rabbi Yochanan's position is that toin tanat ganav pays arba v'chamisha. This braita seems to say otherwise. I can explain that braita in a number of ways. I could say that it was a case of Amad Bedin, that he already had been brought to trial and the trial had concluded. I could say it's a case where he stole with a partner and then he shechs it without the permission of the partner. There also won't be a chiyuv arba v'chamisha. Could be a case of a nevela where there's no shechita, and that's why he's not chayav arba v'chamisha. So I have a number of ways to explain the braita to get out of that problem. He brought one, but you're right, there are other opportunities or options to explain it. As Tosfot notes over here, the other explanations require rejiggering the wording inside of the braita, or adding in a little phrase here, a little phrase there, in order for them to work. But they do work, and it's possible to explain the braita in that manner. So now, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have another statement of Rabbi Chiya Bava in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Atoein tanat ganav bi'aveda mishalem tashlumei kefil. Here's the next chiddush. Not only is a toin tanat ganav pikadon chayav just like a ganav, so too, someone who finds an aveda and then under oath denies that he has it or says it, I'm sorry, under oath says that it was stolen, and then we find out that he himself stole it, he'll pay kefil, my taima, dichtiv, because it says, al kol aveda sheyomar. Because in the psukim dealing with the case of toin tanat ganav, they conclude with a summary pasuk which says, al kol davar pesha, al shor, al chamor, al sal sama, al kol levida, asher yomar, ki uze ad Elohim, yavohu davar shneem, asher yeshun Elohim, yishalem shneem lereyeyu. So we see subsumed in that parshiyav, toinin tanat ganav, is also the case of aveda. That means that aveda will have the same din of toinin tanat ganav, and that means that you're going to be chayav kefel, and that you'll be chayav arba v'chamisha as well. So, Eitvei Rabbi Ava Bar Mamel or Rabbi Chir Ba'ava. So Rabbi Ava Bar Mamel questions this position to Rabbi Chir Ba'ava. Ki Itein Ish. It says there in the Psukim that the Pikadon or the Shomer is established because Ki Itein Ish. A person gave over an item to be entrusted with this other party. Ein Etinat Katan Klum. If a minor gives it over, that's considered to be nothing. Ve'en Le'elesh Netano Kushu Katan. V'Tavao Shu Katan. From that pasuk, I'd only know that if he gave it while he was a katan, and he made a claim against the shomer when he was a katan, that you can't do anything about it, because the nitina, the giving over of the item, was done by a katan, which has no binding authority. Nitano kashu katan, what happens if he gave it to the shomer, the pikadon to the shomer, entrusted with him when he was a katan? V'teva'o kishu gadol. And then he makes a claim against him when he's already someone of age. Minayin, that doesn't result in any case against him. Tamal Omar, ad ha'eluhim yavo d'var shnehem. That it says in the pasuk, until the dayanim will go both of their dinim. Ad she'tei nitina b'tvi'a shavim ke'achad. Until the giving of the item and the claim are similar, which means that they both are when he is of age, not when he is a katan. So how that's learnt out of the pasuk the Rishonim play around with about Yavo Dvar Shnehem, what does that mean, Dvar Shnehem? So does that mean that they're both equal, just like the receiver, the Shomer, must be a Gadol, otherwise he's not a responsible party, because a Katan can't accept Shmirah. So just like the recipient must be a Gadol, so too the giver must be a Gadol. That's one way to learn it. Or the other way to learn it is that with the pasuk, way it reads is ki tain ish el re'ehu kesef o kelim nishmar, and then all the way at the end it says ad Elohim yavo dvar shnehem asher yashun Elohim yishlem shnayim le'ehu. So that means that from beginning to end, that's what the pasuk is saying. Ad, the ki tain is in the beginning, ad yavo dvar shnehem is at the end. So from beginning to end, it has to have the same din, and that's what's learnt out over here. So both of those are possibilities, but either way, what we see is he can't be a katan. Now, what does that have to do with our case over here? V'imita, if you are right, that by a case of aveda, there is Tuein Tanat Ganav, and you mishalem kefel, t'avi nami k'aveda. How different is that than an aveda? An aveda, there's no granting party for the shmirah. The shmirah comes because you found the item, and now you're obligated to do a shmirah on it. On the other hand, when you have a katan giving it to you, so you're saying to me the katan is not a party that can grant or give you the requirement for shmirah. So just say it's the equivalent of him finding it on the street. He found it, and now he has it. It's a responsibility that comes not because there are two parties involved, but because you as a party, a single party, are obligated to watch it. Says, no, that's not a problem. It's a case where the shomer ate it while the kid was still a kid. But according to you, that means that if he ate it while the guy was a gadol, my, what would be the din? Hachanami de Mishalim, he would have to pay in that case. Yochim, that's the case. Adatana, Achatei, Netinyavitz, Viyashavim, Kechad. Then instead of saying that the requirement here is that he has to be a Gadol of age from the beginning when it was given and at the time of the claim, Litne, Achatei, Achilovitz, Viyashavim, Kechad. The requirement is not that the giving be done when he's a Gadol and the Tfiyah, the claim, be done as a Gadol. Rather, the requirement is that the Tfiyah, the claim, be done as a Gadol, and the consumption or the stealing of the item be done when he is a gadol. That's the wording that should have been there. Samarle, you're right. Tnei, emend the braita to read that way. Achatei achil and tviya shavim ke'echad. That it has to be a case where achil and tviya are at the same time, meaning both times where he was a gadol. And ein ochanami, that is the distinction here. That if he ate it when he was a katan, he stole it from him when he was a katan, then there is no obligation. On the other hand, if he gave it to him when he's a katan and then ate it already when he was a gadol, there would be obligation that derives from aveda, and therefore he would be chayav. Even though the netina was not sufficient, the achila was sufficient because it was then done when the individual was a gadol. Since he was a gadol, it would be no different than the case of shomer aveda. Ravashi amar lo dami. Ravashi says that the parallel between the case of aveda and the case of katana is not proper, and therefore you can't come to this conclusion. Aveda kachia mikoach ben dat. Aveda, even though there's only one party here, the party that found the object, and that's what obligates him in the shmirah, nevertheless, when it was dropped or lost, it came from someone who is a bardat, is a gadol. Ba'alo achia mikoach ben dat. On the other hand, when the katan hands it over to this individual, that's not coming from a koach ben dat. So what Ravashi says is that you can actually differentiate between the cases and say that when it comes to aveda, even though there's an interim step where it's lost and there is as if nobody is there, still the two parties that are involved, there was a gadol that lost it and there's a gadol that picked it up. So in essence, what happened is it went from the hand of one gadol to another gadol. Then in the case of a katan giving the item, the katan is giving it over to the gadol. You're missing the bardat to grant it or to give it over at that point in time. And therefore, as Tosafot says over here, "Valiba de Ravashi, demar ein yochol hashbi'a klal, kol ma shifkido b'ktatnuto, afilo ha'pikadon be'ein." That what it says, according to Rav Ashi, is as long as the pikadon was given over as a katan, he has no claim against this individual. He can't force him to take a shvua, even if the pikadon is still extant when the kid grows up and he's now a gadol. He still cannot generate a shvua because the original giving failed the test of ki tenish. And since it fails that test, he can't force a shvua. Because according to the first answer, with the way Rav Chir Ba'alba answered, then in a case where he gave it as a katan, and it's still extant when he is a gadol, there he could force a shvua. He could force a shvua, just like if the guy stole it when he is of age. He could force a shvua, because now once he's of age, it turns it into an aveda. And an aveda, in that case, you can force a shvua. And so that'll be the nafkamina between these two different answers. According to Rav Ashi, when it's given by a katan, there's never going to be a scenario where you're going to have to take a shvua, unless he takes it back and then re-gives it to him when he's a gadol. On the other hand, for the first answer of Rav Chiya Ba'abba, there will be scenarios in which the katan can demand a shvua. It's still extant in the hands of the shomer. When the katan becomes a gadol, the shomer stole it or ate it when the katan was already a gadol. In those scenarios, he could force a shvua on the individual. Okay, we're going to stop here. Three lines from the bottom of Kuvav Amud Bet.